Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Just last week, my colleagues and I wrote down our forecast for this year, and we anticipate ongoing rate increases.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
I think these are the projections, that the latest projections that individual FOMC participants submitted were submitted last Wednesday, so I think they're still fresh, and there's a range of expectations of people on the committee, but I think they're a reasonable set of projections, yes.
Representative Sean Casten is a Democrat from Illinois.
I would just ask you to use your voice as eloquently as you have over the last 2 years. I'm not asking you to tell us how to do our job, but the supply pieces matter. And when the market is baking in a recession, I can justify that logic if the only tool we use are the tools under your purview.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
MPP, which you recognized, was a transition in dairy programs to a risk management based, essentially a risk management based program.
At a recent House Ag Committee hearing on dairy, Scott Marlowe, Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs, FSA.
DMC then built off of that program. What we've seen as we've moved into DMC and we've made a series of improvements in the program, DMC in the transition from MPP dairy lowered the cost of the protection, increased the level of protection that producers could get, and a series of other improvements. Since the start of the administration, we've made a series of improvements again to the dairy margin, to DMC. These include changing the calculation of the cost of production, of the cost of feed, to include 100% high quality alfalfa hay instead of just 50%, so that it more accurately represents the cost that producers are facing. Also, with Congress's authority, we created supplemental DMC, which allowed producers who had increased production from the time that they set their production history back in 2011, 2012, 2013, who had increased their production to increase their coverage under DMC. And that, the introduction of supplemental DMC, it put an extra $580 million into the program.
Tells members of the House Ag Committee that the dairy program is working well.
The changes that we've made so far are very much in response to the input that we've gotten from farmers. Supplemental DMC was an important step. Both DMC and supplemental DMC are equivalent, so it would be very easy to combine the two or to make that a permanent change. We're happy to provide technical assistance and look at any suggested reforms, but we've made extensive changes and improvements to the program over the last couple of years and believe that it is, in concert with the risk management agency programs, a strong safety net.
Dana Cole is Deputy Administrator for the Ag Marketing Services Dairy Program.
I believe that the process that we utilize to make amendments within the Federal Milk Marketing Order System is one that provides for clear transparency, and most importantly, it stimulates and encourages industry participation. USDA must respond to the industry rather than USDA leading. So it is an opportunity for the industry to present issues before the department, and then we can work with them to determine if we need to go to a rulemaking proceeding. But it's a very collaborative process.
And she also explained the federal order system.
We spend a considerable amount of time, and I personally have traveled throughout the United States talking with dairy producers, with cooperatives, with processors regarding what kind of changes might be made to the federal order system. I think that the federal order system is a program that is designed to work in the current structure as well as in any future structure of the industry. The order system adapts and changes on a regular basis to reflect what is happening within the industry itself. Oh. And that's based on proposals that the industry brings forward to the department.
Ranking member from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
Agriculture is a business, right? At the end of the day, it's the margin that matters. So, again, very thankful that we based our safety net for dairy based on margin. It's probably something we need to look at for other commodities.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
One of the hard lessons we've learned from the last few years is that while our farmers and food producers are the very best in the world, their dedication is not enough when supply chains break down.
Chair of the Senate Ag Committee for Michigan is Debbie Stabenow.
When that happens, farmers and hardworking Americans alike who count on affordable food pay the price. During the pandemic, a range of disruptions took large chunks of processing capacity offline for months at a time, leading to empty shelves and skyrocketing prices for shoppers. Meanwhile, a few of the largest companies at the top reaped record profits, even as farmers saw less money for what they produce. A supply chain with less competition and transparency poses serious risks. Fewer options mean fewer bids for the cattle that producers sell. And as the largest meat packers muscle out smaller competitors, farmers have limited local options and longer waiting times. The good news is that work is already underway. In the American Rescue Plan, we secured $1 billion for local and regional meat processing, and Secretary Vilsack is investing even more into processing capacity. But more needs to be done. This committee has addressed these issues head on. Last June, we held a hearing on the problems facing beef producers, and in April, we held a legislative hearing to receive feedback on the bills we are considering today. So I want to thank Senators Grassley, Tester, Fisher, and Wyden for their leadership on these important issues. These bills will make progress toward a more competitive, transparent, and fair supply chain that is better for American farmers and better able to keep food on our tables. And I look forward to supporting these bills today and would urge my colleagues to do this as well.
New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
I just first want to just echo some of the things that have already been said, but I strongly support the bill that Senator Thune and Senator Tester are leading to restore mandatory country of origin labeling in general, and I hope that we can find a path forward for that bill. The amendment that Senator Lujan and I filed is a much more narrow one that would simply close what I consider a highly egregious USDA loophole that currently allows imported meat to be labeled as product of the USA. Right now, the Amazon rainforest is being burned down so that more beef can be produced in Brazil, having an effect on our entire planet as a rainforest are being called the lungs of the world. Big companies like JBS slaughter and process that meat in Brazil, and then ship it to the United States and repackage it here, and then sell it at a premium in our stores labeled as product of the USA. This is a fraudulent practice that hurts consumers in my state and around the country, and it hurts ranchers here in the United States who should be the ones benefiting from the product of the USA label.
And Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville.
As I have said before, Alabama cattle producers have made it clear to me that they do not, but they do support actions in our cattle markets, but do not support this bill because it helps create better price discovery for cattle sales and transparency in the marketplace. However, this underlying bill, as presented for the committee today, is not the answer for the majority of those who I represent. With that said, I came here to Washington to help remove federal regulations and mandates on private industry, not to impose them through legislation. I strongly support this amendment to remove the government mandate on how cattle must be marketed and sold within the industry. But I remain committed to work with my colleagues on and off this committee to bring solutions across the entire nation that offer more efficiency in cattle marketing and overall transparency.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think we've all established that this drought is unprecedented. And I understand from your testimony, Commissioner, that the Colorado River is facing a structural deficit of between 2 and 4 million acre feet of water next year.
Recent Senate hearing on the Western drought, Mark Kelly, Senator from Arizona, with the Bureau of Reclamation's Camille Totten.
To put that amount in perspective for everybody in the room or anybody who's watching, Arizona's allocation of Colorado River water is 2.8 million acre feet. California, 4.4 million. Colorado gets 3.9 million acre feet from the river. Arizona has junior water rights in their allocation to the river. So if our state absorbed this 2 to 4 million acre feet loss, it would wipe out deliveries water deliveries to cities, tribes, and farms in Phoenix and in Tucson. This is certainly not in the public interest, given our state's national role in ag, strategic minerals, and semiconductor manufacturing. You mentioned, Commissioner, that Reclamation is working with basin states to develop a consensus agreement to conserve more water in Lake Mead and Lake Powell by August. I want to make sure we understand your testimony. If basin states cannot reach an agreement, is the department prepared to take actions to impose restrictions on other states without regard to river priority?
Yes, we will protect the system. But we're not at that decision point yet. So let's get to the table and let's figure this out by August.
Okay. When do you anticipate you might get to that decision point?
For us on the river, the August 24-month study is usually where we determine what our operations are for the next calendar year. Since August 16th is the date that normally where we had the first Tier 1 shortage announcement last year.
Okay.
That's what we're working towards.
All right. Thank you. So Arizona has been leading the basin in conserving water to date. Farms have been fallowed. Tribes are forgoing their full water rights allocations. Cities are tightening their water budgets. We've worked to conserve nearly 850,000 acre feet in the lower basin. And Arizona's done everything that Arizona has been asked. And we're going to continue to step up here. But we need partners and long-term commitments from the federal government, because this is a basin-wide problem, not just an Arizona problem. We laid the groundwork for increasing conservation and augmentation in the bipartisan infrastructure bill that was passed, and we fully funded programs like the drought contingency plan and the 500-plus plan to keep more water in Lake Mead. Commissioner Tootin, does California or the Upper Basin have a plan for how it will utilize resources under the drought contingency plan?
Those are conversations that are ongoing, including with the Upper Basin states and certainly with California.
So you don't know if they currently have a plan?
There is the Drought Relief Operations Act that the Upper Basin has, but could there be more system demand management? Yes.
Will the administration be pushing Mexico to conserve more Colorado River water?
That is a conversation we're having with our partners in Mexico. They're fully aware we've briefed them in the way that we've briefed you on what we're seeing on the river. They are absolutely a partner here that we need to work with.
And, Commissioner, can the federal government move faster in deploying desalinization and water recycling projects under the bipartisan infrastructure law?
Yes, we will.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'd like to discuss with you today an issue that is of significant concern to me and many of my colleagues.
Quite a few hearings this time of year on Capitol Hill, and the House Financial Services Committee holding one on monetary policy. The Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell there facing questions from Oklahoma's Frank Lucas.
The SEC's regulatory agenda has more than 50 significant proposals that are currently underway or approaching a final vote. These rules cut across every asset class under the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission's jurisdiction. The sheer complexity and volume of these overlapping rulemakings could negatively impact markets and the public that depends on them. SEC Commissioner Hester Peirce warned that the speed and character of these rulemakings could create dangerous conditions in our capital markets. Now, this is against the backdrop of the U.S. economy facing significant challenges. We've discussed that all morning. Inflation at more than a 40-year high, with substantial increases in the cost of food, housing, and gas prices, record prices. Also, supply chain backlogs and labor shortages continue to weigh on the economy, with consumer and business confidence plummeting. And, of course, we're still studying the impact of the global pandemic and the consequences of the ongoing Russian invasion of the Ukraine. In Oklahoma, small businesses, farmers, ranchers are navigating through surging energy prices and volatile agricultural markets for inputs like grain and fertilizer. Poor crop conditions and high commodity prices are expected to worsen the situation throughout the summer and into the rest of the year. In uncertain times like this, market participants need to seek to protect their retirement savings, to hedge risk, and to safeguard their livelihoods. A top priority should be supporting liquid markets to protect the U.S. economy from the face of these substantial headwinds. I know you don't comment on other entities within the federal government. I know these regulations that are going to have such a tremendous impact are not coming from your area. But unfortunately, I'm concerned that the magnitude and the significance of rulemaking proposals coming out of the SEC in such a short amount of time runs counter to the goal. We know that regulatory uncertainty creates adverse market environment for economic growth and market stability.
Lucas is a former chairman of the House Ag Committee, but tees up gas prices.
As you've acknowledged, the Fed's monetary policy tools can do very little to mitigate rising gas prices. However, the increased cost of gas has an oversized impact on consumer inflation expectations. Folks see the price at the pump going up and experience the price per gallon at an all-time high. Could you discuss how the Fed envisions its ability to rein in inflation expectations, driven in large part by gas prices? Or put another way, if gas prices remain at record levels, is an aggressive response from the Fed all but guaranteed?
Well, if gas prices remain at the current levels they're at, then inflation, you know, it's the problem is inflation means continuing to go up. So it isn't so much the level as the rate of change, as you know. So I think we are mindful that even though these things are outside of our control, the gas prices and food prices for the most part, that just that adds a little bit of urgency in our wanting to get our rates into a place where we're addressing inflation directly, because the public reacts to all kinds of inflation, not just core inflation. Our tools tend to generally go to core inflation. So, we don't think we can use our tools to change energy prices, but we do think that they add to our desire to get expeditiously to the appropriate levels.
And clearly, Congress and the administration, the majority, has a responsibility to increase supplies of resources, not discourage that.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I think that when you're talking about transparency, when you're talking about pricing in cattle markets, there probably isn't anything that matters more to producers around this country than being able to differentiate their product from other products that are imported from other places around the world.
South Dakota Senator John Thune.
When it comes to the underlying bill that we're going to be voting on here momentarily, there are issues that, at least in my state, we've been through several farm bills that I've actually now been involved with four. The one we're heading into would be my fifth, going back to our days in the House of Representatives. And I keep a very close relationship with our agricultural groups in South Dakota. And on this particular legislation, the Cattle Transparency Markets Bill, my constituency is very divided. I have groups that are for it. I have groups that are against it. And I like to listen to all my groups. It'd be nice if there was a position where there was more unity. We've had people testify in front of this committee. Justin Tupper, who runs the St. Ange Sale Barn in South Dakota, did a great job of explaining some of the issues related to cattle pricing these days. And he's a supporter of this bill. I give great weight to his opinions on these issues. But we also have organizations in my state that are strongly, and I say strongly, opposed to this bill. The one thing that generally unites them, I would say with one exception in South Dakota, is their support for mandatory country of origin labeling. And I think the reason for that is very simple. We label everything in this country. The tie that you're wearing, all the clothes that you're wearing, my belt, everything we wear, everything we buy in this country is labeled, except the thing that we put in the center of our plate, beef and pork. We label poultry. We label lamb. We label fish. We don't label beef and pork. And I think we have tried this before, and we've run into resistance from the World Trade Organization. And so this was repealed over my objections back in 2016 in an appropriation bill. But we worked hard in two previous farm bills to get country of origin labeling included. Now, since it was repealed in 2016, a lot has happened. We passed USMCA. The two objectors to country of origin labeling at the World Trade Organization were Canada and Mexico. And the World Trade Organization found that there were technical barriers related to segregating and record keeping around that. Well, since then, we've passed a trade agreement that is very beneficial to both of those countries. We have a lot of new technology these days that should eliminate some of the record keeping and segregation issues that always seem to get in the way of this. And Senator Tester and I, who introduced this bill, designed it so that USTR and the Department of Agriculture could write the bill in a way that is WTO compliant. In the past, it's been us, Congress, who has written the meat labeling bill. And when it got voted down at the WTO, there was a movement here to try and repeal it, which happened. But I would argue that if we're going to do this in the right way, let's give the USTR, the United States Trade Representative's Office, and USDA an opportunity to collaborate. And our bill allows them 1 year to do that, 1 year to work in a way that would create a labeling regime in this country that would survive a challenge at the World Trade Organization that they would be willing to go and fight for at the World Trade Organization. I just get tired of kowtowing to the World Trade Organization.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Markets are there to, one of the things they do is process information and consider the implications of it, and it's critical that markets be liquid enough to do that.
Jerome Powell is the chairman of the Federal Reserve, testifying before the House Financial Services Committee on Thursday.
If that happens, then financial conditions can adjust and equity prices of various kinds can adjust. And that's one of their big functions, is to do that, and to absorb news, sometimes very difficult news, in a way that preserves stability.
But to actually have a product to trade, you've got to get rid of red tape and too many obstacles, says Patrick O'Toole, President, Family Farm Alliance.
The thing that I'd like to emphasize, though, and let's just take the cattle and sheep industry that I'm involved in, you know, the pricing that's going to the consumer has nothing to do with the producers. We're not receiving that benefit. And, you know, what I think is America's is this ecological and incredible system that knows how to produce food and knows how to do rural communities. I said at a hearing with Senator Bennett recently, what's happening in the Amazon is a crime against humanity. And we've got to realize that in places where good is happening, we have to accelerate the benefits. And the base benefit for the American population is a food supply. We are giving away our food supply capability. And the recommendations from the Family Farm Alliance are specific. Things that this committee has recommended, things that the Ag Committee has recommended, we just have to start implementing. If there's one message I have today, it's implementation. Please let there is no esprit de corps in a lot of the bureaucracy right now. That's a result of COVID and all kinds of things. The agencies have to have the ability to direct activities that we all agree on to get done. And the permitting of the reservoir in my community that I'm very familiar with is so frustrating. Meeting two times a week in a no-brainer process. The Forest Service is desperate to get in and fix what they know is broken, to deliver water. 160,000 acre feet doesn't go down the North Platte River because the forest isn't functioning. We know that. We have to change that. And that's the case with every watershed in the western United States where the water for the Bureau of Rec comes from.
Dr. Maurice Hall is with the Environmental Defense Fund.
One important thing we have to realize is that we don't actually know how this is going to evolve.
Right.
And so we have to be aware, continuously adaptive, and that gets to the point that I was describing about collaboration, which also addresses some of the points about regulation. And what you can do in collaboration is you can work together in an organized way to come up with programs and then figure out how to make them work with the different various regulations. So on the point of aridification, we have in the past tended to view our water management through a lens of stability. I had one entire class in my graduate work on the different distributions, normal and non-normal distributions of the climate patterns in the past, and that's what we did all the designs on. That class, as difficult as it was, is no longer even useful. We have to throw all of that out and increase our real-time and near real-time monitoring and information processing and be prepared to make adjustments as we discover how the new climate processes are affecting our water resources.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You and I have talked before that your rhetoric, your language, making it clear to all of us and to the nation that we needed a balanced fiscal and monetary policy in response to the downturn created the political space for us to do what we did. I don't think we could have done that without your voice. And the fact that we had as not only as rapid a recovery, but as equitable a recovery as we did was because we had that space. And I think history will show that we owe you more gratitude than we've given you. And I thank you for that.
Representative Sean Casten from Illinois is a member of the House Financial Services Committee.
The fact that wages grew fastest for the bottom quintile did not happen but for that fiscal policy that complemented what you were doing. And yet we find ourselves today with people talking about fear of a recession. And I would submit to you that the fear of a recession is not because our economy is weak, but because our democracy is weak.